gold finger. He's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch. Such a cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. You feel for a golden girl knows when he's kissed her. It's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. You feel for a golden girl knows when he's kissed her. It's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart.
A very specific reason for that title, for this second hour, for that opening piece of music. Welcome back, my friends. Interesting. I have never really devoted an entire hour to economic headlines. But then I've not really done an economic program since, I don't know, maybe last Tuesday. I've lost track. I've had a strange week. I think I shared with you, maybe I didn't, a week ago Friday, at about 10 o'clock at night, I just was not doing right. I went up to the ER and I was the only person in the ER room, which was weird. Walked in there, checked in with a guy who I've never met before, who was far more into doing things the right way than the usual bimbos that work there. And he got me in right away. They, you know, do your temperature and they do a couple of other quick tests, etc. And they normally send you back out to wait for them to call you in. Well, they hauled me in right away. They stuck me in a wheelchair. And normally I could walk back, but not this time. They made a determination I needed to be in a wheelchair. They took me back into the ER room that's closest to where the ambulances come in. And I figured they're going to stick me in one of the beds in the hallway. Put me into a room right away. And shortly, a PA, which is a physician's assistant, came in. And we talked for a bit, and he took a look at the initial tests and strongly urged that I plan on staying the night, which I told him I'd come here with that intent. And that was the last time I saw Kurt. You know, they had folks coming in, connecting me with this machine, that machine, which is watching my blood pressure, watching my heart rate, watching my, you know, all this nonsense. And I never saw the guy again. 6 o'clock in the morning comes, it's a shift exchange. They send a doctor in to see me who takes some piece of equipment and wants to stick it up against my little heart device that's involved and starts pushing on it. I said, excuse me, do you realize I've got a, you know, that this heart machine in there? And he takes it off me, turns around, walks away. About 10 minutes later, another doctor comes in who maybe kind of half recognized me. He takes a look at where this I've got this device and says, I'm actually one of the doctors that installs those, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's the last time I saw him. And this goes on and on. So I get a PA or a nurse, as it were, who takes a responsibility of keeping their eyes on me and watching the machines. And as the machine they've got me connected to starts going haywire, making noises every once in a while that made no sense to me. And apparently it may have had some changes to heart rates and all sorts of stuff. So they kind of stayed on this. But by 3 o'clock the next afternoon, nothing's going on. No doctor comes in. Nobody comes in to talk to me about the results of the x-rays that were done and the CT scans and the other various things. There's nothing positive or negative being said at all. And my PA came in and said, look, man, I don't know what the heck's going on, but I think it's time for me to leave. And he says, okay, I understand. I'll be right back. He comes back with a piece of paper that he asks me to sign. I said, what is it? He said, well, because you are making a decision to leave against our recommendations for you to stay. And then I explained to him exactly what I just explained to you. I said, look, number one, I'm feeling fine. And I'm not going to sign the paperwork. And I basically, they let me go. Last Friday, I get a registered letter from the hospital, which I can't even explain to you. It's the most insane thing I've ever seen. No one wrote it. It's just a printout that, once again, makes absolutely no sense. Well, you may be liable for this expense and that expense, and you may have to pay this bill, and blah, 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 blah. And it's just, so I've got to deal with that thing now. And on top of that, we got a bunch of work done around the house this weekend with my buddy Riley. And, you know, but then I continue to fight this email issue I talked to you about last hour. And fortunately, we got all that taken care of today, so I am at peace today, which is good. Well, let's move forward with the topic of the hour. Is the gold standard history something we were on for many, many, many years? Once again, I can go back and refer you to the piece that we've talked about at length over the last few days, or since we did the program last Thursday, because it is amazingly powerful. I'm not going to make any money having you look at it and read it, but you're going to have a far more distinct understanding of exactly why and how we got into these problems in this country. Who is in control? Because that is the key element. Many of us have talked about who's in control over years, years and years and years of broadcasting. But to go to Federal Observer and go to this column, it's down the fourth or fifth entry on the front page, Fagan, the Illuminati and the Council on Foreign Relations. You've got to understand who the Council on Foreign Relations is. Still, what their goals were, how they manipulated all of this to take place, which ultimately, of course, led to the failure or the advent of the Federal Reserve under Woodrow Wilson in 2013, which we talked about. Important to listen to that complete audio presentation, not of me, but by the author, Myron Fagan. In the 19th century, which would have been the 1800s, debates on monetary issues, my friends, were highly public and intensely controversial. Do you favor the national bank, the gold standard, bimetabolism? What is your opinion of the free silver movement? what is most important, a highly liquid money stock that can prop up commodity prices or a sound dollar that promotes thrift and discourages debt accumulation? Should the monetary system reward debtors or creditors? These were the issues, my friends, debated in the nation's newspapers, discussed in political meetings, and raged on the streets. We're talking about back in the 1800s. Back then, every educated man had an opinion. And part of the reason is that, frankly, people were much better educated in those days. My friends, it's astonishing to think of today. But average people had the mental equipment to enable them to understand these complicated issues, if not always to arrive at the right conclusions. The federal government had long been involved in money precisely because this was one of the first areas that government likes to get its grubby hands on when it takes power. And the United States government was no exception, despite constitutional provisions that would appear to restrict its monetary power. But then you see matters are radically different today, aren't they? It's so very rare to see an article addressing the money question in the nation's newspapers. Debates and discussions are left to the academic journals or the self-published tracts of money cranks. With the major exception of maybe the Austrian economists who continue to believe that the money issue is both academically important and politically crucial. And that is why for almost four decades now, I think, the Mises Institute has been sponsoring research and writing on the gold standard, promoting an idea that most public intellectuals find absurdly anachronistic, that a gold standard is and would be better than our current monetary system. And what's more, that we not only believe that the gold standard had a better record historically, we believe that we ought to institute a gold standard right now. Think about this. All of this goes back to a long, long time ago. It is true that not a soul in Washington, apart from former Congressman Ron Paul, he was one of the few to talk at all about the gold standard. Alan Greenspan, who once wrote that freedom is inseparable from the gold standard, and he dreaded being asked about the subject later, because to him it was entirely theoretical with no practical import. And by that time, he didn't want people looking too closely at the kinds of things that he did at the Fed, any more than the Wizard of Oz wanted anyone to pull back the curtain. Most economists have no interest in the issue. One of the most influential economists of the last century was John Maynard Keynes. And he hated the gold standard with astonishing intensity. He considered it his great accomplishment in life to have assisted in the destruction of the gold standard. And even to this day, his influence remains immense, with most economists accepting the broad framework that he laid out in his work and sharing his conviction that the worst thing that could befall any society is for the government to lose its power to manage economic life. But there's many objections to the conventional view of the gold standard. But let's respond to the point about realism. There's a lot of policies which seem unrealistic to promote, we can admit that there is little prospect that the post office will be privatized anytime too soon. But that fact doesn't diminish our responsibility to push the idea. Nothing could be more obvious than private enterprise would do a better job of delivering letters than the government does. But if no one says it, if people are not willing to state what is true again and again, then all hope for change is lost. And sometimes just stating what is true is enough to bring about change when conditions are ripe for it. So, in a debate regarding the post office, let's face it, my friends, we once had the added advantage of being able to point to a superior and very well-developed sector of private package and letter delivery. Well, today those days are gone. I've had people over the last 6-8 months, the last year, who have, whether through priority mail, whether through first class, through registered, mail me checks for purchases they'd acquired through us. 3-4 weeks later, the checks don't show up. They had to go to their bank. They had to cancel the check. They had to reissue a new one. Or in some cases, they just turned around and said the hell with it and wired the funds. What's the reason for all of this insanity? Post office is no longer thriving. A lot of loopholes in the law, which many companies exploit. If the letter statutes were repealed, I've got no doubt that first-class letters would be deliverable by private enterprise within days. And that's precisely why the post office is so anxious to hold on to its legal privileges. But in any case, as with the gold standard, it might be said that advocating privatization is politically unrealistic and therefore a waste of time. What's more, we might say that by continuing to harp on the issue, we only marginalize ourselves, proving that we are on the fringe. Once again, I submit there is no better way to assure that an issue will always be off the table than to stop talking about it. And all of this is applied to the gold standard over these years. The case for radical monetary reform is as obvious as the need to sell the post office. Every year or 18 months or 2 years or 3 years, the world goes through some sort of monetary convulsion. Over the past few decades, we've seen it in Mexico, all through Asia, Latin America, and certainly right here in this country. To one degree or another, there are a few problems of international economics that are not traceable to the grave limitations of a world fiat monetary system. And this includes the problem of the business cycle itself. During a recession, Austrian theory of the trade cycle received a fantastic amount of public commentary and attention. The core ideas of this theory is that Fed-created credit is responsible for the boom and the bust, and it has been embraced by top economists at some of the largest and most prestigious investment houses. Over the years, the Mises Institute has done a fine job in getting the word out about the true cost of the business cycle. But the real reason it was getting such attention is that it provides such a compelling explanation of the 1990s bubble and the later crisis, including the one we're going through right now. And yet, neither do most economists doubt that financial bubbles would not be a problem under the gold standard, even if they believe the gold standard introduces problems of its own, such as greed. Far from being an arcane and anachronistic issue, we can see that the gold standard and the issues it raises get right to the heart of the current debate concerning the future of the world economy and its reform. What the critics who denounce gold are really saying is that the government and its friends don't like the idea of a gold standard, so therefore, they're not going to favor one. Why do governments and its partisans dislike the gold standard? Because it removes the discretionary power of the Fed by placing severe limits on the ability of the central bank to inflate the money supply. Without that discretionary power, the government has far fewer tools of central planning at its disposal. Government can regulate, which is a function of the police power. Government can tax, which involves taking people's property. And government can spend, which means redistributing other people's property. But its activities in the financial area are radically curbed. Think about this. Some of these things we are experiencing in depth today. Tax. Our taxes keep going up. Our cost of Medicare and Medicaid and things like that keep going up. Health care. I've got two prescriptions that I am currently on that used to cost $90 for each one for a three-month supply. A three-month supply. In January of last year, 2023, I paid $90 each for the last time. And when they were due for renewal in April, the cost, no, I'm sorry, in January of 2023, one of those went from $90 to 130 some. And when they renewed in April, the cost went to in the upper $400 range with some bogus excuse. And I can't remember what that excuse was. It's nonsense. Which means I would have to fork out that kind of money for at least two, three more times during the year. And then come January, the price dropped back down to $130 some odd. And now it's April, and man, the prices get jacked right back up again. It's some nonsensical thing that I've never experienced with it. Government spends, redistributing other people's property. I'm not talking about physical real estate. Our property, our money, things we've worked for. They redistribute it to illegals. Think of our local and state governments. They tax, they spend. They manipulate, they intervene. And as with all governments from the beginning of time, they generally retard social progress. They muck things up as much as possible. What they do not do, however, is run huge deficits or accumulate trillions of dollars in debt or reduce the value of money or bail out foreign governments or provide endless credits to failing enterprises or administer hugely expensive and destructive social insurance schemes or bring about immense swings in business activities. Except that that's what they do now. State and local governments are awful. And they must be relentlessly checked, but they are not anything like the threat of the federal government. And neither, as a rule, are they as arrogant or convinced of their own infallibility and indispensability. For they lack the aura of invincibility that the central government enjoys. But then the states are getting it stuck to them too. Why is all of this? You might say it's because the federal government already does things. But no government has ever been troubled by the prospect of providing redundant services, you see. You might say at the state level, constitutions restrict their activities, but our experience with the federal government demonstrates that constitutions cannot restrain a government by themselves. And the main reason, I believe, is that the state and local governments do not issue their own currencies controlled by central banks. You see, it is the central bank, or the Federal Reserve, and only the central bank that works as the government's money machine. And this makes all the difference. The Federal Reserve, the only central bank that works as the government's money machine. Oh, son of a gun. Once again, we have to refer back to Myron Fagan, the Illuminati and the Council on Foreign Relations. I'm not going to make a damn penny referring you to that article, but you are going to fully understand the truth of all of this and who has controlled it since then. But understand, it's not impossible that a central bank can exist alongside a gold standard, a lender of last resort that avoids the temptation to destroy that which restrains it. But in the same way, it is possible for someone with an insatiable appetite to sit at a banquet table of delicious food and not eat. But let's just say that the existence of a central bank introduces an occasion of sin for the government. And that's why under the best gold standard, there would be no central bank. Gold coins would once again circulate as freely as their substitutes, and rules against fraud and theft would prohibit banks from pyramiding credit on top of demand deposits. So long as we're constructing the perfect system, all coinage would be private. Banks would be treated as businesses. No special privileges, no promises of bailout, no subsidized insurance, and no connection to government at any level. This is the free market system of monetary management, which means turning over the institution of money entirely to the market economy. And as with any institution in a free society, it is not imposed from above, dictated by a group of so-called experts, but is the de facto result that comes about in a society that consistently respects private property rights and encourages enterprise. Look, my friends, money is not something chosen by social managers, but the consequence of economic development. As society moves from barter to indirect exchange, one commodity that is widely in demand comes to operate as a medium of exchange, a commodity for which any good or service can be traded with the expectation that this commodity will be demanded by others in future exchanges. Historically, precious metals, gold in particular, have traditionally served as the money of choice. As was once explained by Murray Rothbard, the institutions we call banks serve a dual function in a free market system. First, they provide safekeeping for one's money and offer money substitutes that they certify really do represent money in the vault. And secondly, they provided credit services both to savers who would like to see money risk in the loan market and the borrowers who need cash for purposes of consumption or investment. And back in the day, the banks worked as brokers between those parties to effect mutually beneficial exchanges. And so if any market-chosen commodity can perform the function of money, why are we Austro-libertarians focused on gold? It's often said that we have an obsession with gold and a fixation on the subject of money. And to some degree, this is This alleged obsession is shared by popular culture, by financial markets, as a continuing testimony to the power of the idea of gold as a guarantor of value. That's the key. A guarantor of value. As I've shared with you time and time and time again, stop paying attention to what spot gold is at any moment in time. Spot gold is what gold is worth on paper, on Wall Street. It's what they sell contracts for, but they ain't selling the real thing. They're selling a contract. If the market goes down, you dip into your pocket and come up with the cash to cover the loss. That's how it works. Once you've got it in your possession, you shut up about it. You don't tell your family. You don't tell your cousins, your best friend. None of their damn business. Because their mouths are too big. Whenever a writer wants to convey the idea that something sets the highest standard, he refers to it as the gold standard. Recently, there was a column in the London Daily Telegraph, an article on grade inflation in British schools, in which the writer counterpoised the grading gold standard of the past. I guess the metaphor seems quite apt, does it not? But as for the financial markets, events more recently than in many years have again underscored the underlying obsession, if you want to call it that, that the world's financial markets have with gold. It's not a coincidence. Gold mining stocks have performed very well over the last period of time. Recently, we saw spot prices of gold begin to move very rapidly in response to the growing perception that the financial sector was far from bottoming out. I mean, look at what's happened to the value of gold this year. Continues to reach all-time highs. But try as it might, the establishment just can't seem to crush the perception that gold is more reliable than government's paper money. And it is. Once again, stop paying attention to the up and down. It means nothing. Gold continues to be seen as a standard of soundness, as a commodity to flee to in times of emergency. It's the last store of value that can be counted on. Neither of these emergencies unknown in the modern world. Latin America, a few years ago, we witnessed governments prohibiting withdrawals from banks during financial crisis, exactly as we saw happen in the early days of the Great Depression in this country. There are many areas around the world. Gold continues to be perceived as a safe haven from the wiles of political opportunism and violence. J. Bradford DeLong, former Assistant U.S. Treasury Secretary, once wrote the following. 102 years ago, he said, John Maynard Keynes argued that governments needed to take responsibility for maintaining full employment and price stability, that the pre-World War I gold standard had not been the golden age people thought it was, and that its successes were the result of a lucky combination of circumstances unlikely to be repeated. Keynes, he said, was an optimist in believing that governments could learn to manage the business cycle, end of quote. But then he continued to point out that the record of post-gold currencies had been a disaster as compared with their promise. I guess that's the way you read into it. Because in this respect, fiat currency has much in common with socialism, my friends. They both failed to live up to their promises. And indeed failed miserably by every single standard. But they both long outlived their failures, simply because political elites had too much invested in them to change the system. And the intellectual class worked overtime to shore up support for the failed system. And eventually, of course, full-blown socialism collapsed. Or did it? One could only believe that fiat currencies will as well, but I'm not sure about that today. Murray Rothbard had once written that it might be thought that the mix of government and money is too far gone, too pervasive in the economic system, too inextricably bound up in the economy to be eliminated without economic destruction. In truth, he said, taking back our money would be relatively simple and straightforward, much less difficult than the daunting task of denationalizing and decommunicizing the communist countries of Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. And for all these reasons that gold eventually emerged as the money of choice thousands of years ago, it continues to have the properties that make it the best money of choice to this very day, my friends. It is portable, divisible, fungible, durable, and has a high ratio of value per unit of weight. It's compatible with today's economy, driven by information technology and lightning-quick financial transactions, as it was compatible with the 19th century economy of heavy industry and agriculture. It's not technical limitations that prevent the dollar from being redefined as a unit weight of gold, but it's political ones. The monetary benefits of a gold standard are clear enough. They include life without inflation, an end to the business cycle, rational economic calculation and accounting in international trade, an encouragement to savings, and a dethroning of the government-connected financial elite. But it's also political considerations that draw people to support the gold standard. Gold limits the power of the state, puts power back in the hands of the people. And once you begin to understand the role of the monetary regime in the building of the modern statist enterprise, in providing the means of funding for the entire welfare warfare state, or in generating financial instability, or in destroying savings and undermining living standards, and we begin to realize that there's far too little interest in the subject in the mainstream press. We begin to realize that the 19th century focus on the money issue was entirely appropriate. So when one begins to read, to study the work of Mises or Rothbard or any number of great monetary theorists, one begins to realize that understanding the monetary regime is the key that unlocks the mysteries of political control in our time. The Fed was not created to scientifically manage the economy, as journals claimed at the time, but because it met the institutional needs of both the government and the banking industry. Government sought a means of finance that did not depend on taxation, and the banking industry sought what Rothbard called was a cartelization device. In other words, the banking industry was seeking some way to prevent competitive pressures between banks from limiting their ability to expand credit. Well, central bank fit the bill. The central bank managing a currency that is not tied to anything real fits the bill even better, if a little power to inflate is good for the government and its connected banking and financial interest, and a lot of power to inflate is even better. And for this reason, it was very likely that the gold standard could not have survived the creation of a central bank. And for the same reason, the creation of a new gold standard would have to do away with the central bank that would always threaten to bring it down. Look, the power to create money is the most ominous power ever bestowed on any human being. The power is rightly criminalized when it's exercised by private individuals. And even today, everyone knows why counterfeiting is wrong and knavish. And yet far fewer are aware of the role of the federal government, the Fed, the fiat dollar, in making possible the largest counterfeiting operation in human history, which is, interestingly enough, called the world dollar standard. And yet fewer still understand the connection between this officially sanctioned criminality and the business cycle and the rise and the collapse of the stock market and the continued erosion of the value of the dollar. fact, I would venture to guess that a sizable percentage of even educated adults would be astounded to discover that the Federal Reserve does more than manage the nation's money accounts. That, in fact, its main activity consists in actually creating money that distorts production and creates inflation in the business cycle. In fact, I'd go further to suggest that many educated adults believe that gold continues to serve as the ultimate backing of our monetary system. Oh, God. And they would be astonished to discover that our money is backed by nothing but more of itself. We have our work cut out for us, to be sure. Mainly at the educational level. We must continue to state the obvious at every opportunity that the fiat system is exactly what it is, a system of paper money backed by nothing of real value. We must continue to point out that because of this, our economic system is not depression-proof, but rather highly vulnerable to complete meltdown. We must continue to draw attention to the only long-term solution, a complete separation of money and state based on the commodity that the market has always chosen as money for thousands of years, gold. And apart from making the intellectual case, the biggest obstacle we currently face is that most all theoretically viable plans for radical monetary reform depend heavily on those who are currently in charge of mismanaging our money being the ones to manage the transition. In many ways, my friend, this is akin to expecting the Politburo to have instituted a free market economy in Russia before the great counter-revolution. I mean, could we really expect that Alan Greenspan woke up one day and decided to do the right thing? He didn't. Oh, he wrote a great article. We've got it published on Sierra Madre Precious Metals, but so what? He didn't live it. Well, I recognize that this problem we've covered is a real one. But it's no different from the rest of the practical problems of instituting freedom. When we call for spending cuts, we're implicitly calling upon Congress to do something that is against its self-interest. And when we call for deregulating financial markets, we are expecting the SEC to do the very thing it is least likely to do from a bureaucratic pressure group perspective. And when we call for sound money, we are similarly expecting those who currently benefit from the present system to have a change of heart and mind and to act against their own interests. Which takes us back to our original question at the beginning of the hour. Is the gold standard history? Is it so preposterously unrealistic to advocate that we might as well move on to other things? Oh, might not surprise you that my answer is no. If there's one thing that a long-term view of politics teaches, it is that only the long term really matters. Back in 1997 and 98, we were considered a crabby kook behind the times to warn that the bull market in tech stocks could not last. But economic law intervened and fashions changed. And back in the days, had you suggested that the business cycle had not been repealed, you would have been dismissed out of hand. But economic law intervened. In the same way, there will come a time when the current money and banking system, living off credit created by a fiat money system, will be stretched beyond the limit, my friends. And when it happens, attitudes will turn on a dime. No advocate of the gold standard looks forward to the crisis nor to the human suffering that will come with it. We do, however, look forward to the reassertion of economic law in the field of money and banking. And if and when it becomes incredibly obvious that something drastic must replace the current system, A new attention will be paid to the voices that have long cast aspersions on the current system and called for a restoration of sound money. I'm an unusual bird. Very few people will you ever meet in, let's call it, the precious metals field. People like myself who for over 30 years now have been involved with the marketing of gold, silver, in some cases, rare coins, for those who had the funds and were interested in expanding some of their holdings into those areas. I'm one of the extremely rare ones you will ever talk to and meet that got into this field at a very young age. Oh, I don't mean from the professional standpoint. The standpoint of when I first began to buying. Thank you. At the age of 10, sitting in a bank vault in Maquoketa, Wisconsin, with my grandfather, going through bags of silver dollars, peace dollars, were still legal in 1958. And we would go through these bags and put complete rolls of dated rolls together. And I began to look for those who were in the best of shape and those that were in the cruddiest of shape. We weren't looking for the perfect pieces, but we had the ability to do it. And we went out that summer three different times to the bank and sat in a vault with a bag, putting these rolls together. I purchased several of them. I wasn't a rich kid, but they were a buck a piece. Each roll cost $20. Interesting stuff. 2 years later, I went to an auction with him, interestingly enough, in Maquoketa, with his girlfriend, Thea. This her, this him. Bought a couple of gold pieces. German 20 marks. Cost me about $12 a coin. It's a rarity you're going to find stuff like that. Too many people got drawn into the business because, oh, you're going to make so much money, knowing nothing about what they were dealing with. Very, very common. So the question I ask, must a crisis lead to monetary reforms that we would like? Not necessarily, and for that matter, a crisis is not a necessary precursor to radical reform. As Mises himself used to emphasize, political history has no predetermined course. Everything depends on the ideas that people hold about fundamental issues of human freedom and the place of government. Under the right conditions, I have no doubt that a gold standard could be completely restored, no matter how unfavorable the current environment appears towards its restoration. What is essential for us today, my friends, is to continue to research the writing, the advocacy, and the discussion of sound money for a dollar that is as good as gold, for a monetary system that is separate from the state. Maybe it's merely a vision, but it is a beautiful vision indeed, one in which the people and not the government and its connected interest groups maintain control of their money and its safekeeping. What has been true for hundreds of years, thousands of years, remains true today. The clearest path to the restoration of economic health is the free market undergirded by a sound monetary system. And the clearest path towards economic destruction is for us to stop working toward what is right and true. We cannot stop. There are times I was ready to walk away and stop broadcasting, stop sharing the message. I can't do that. I will not stop working toward what is right and true. What we've spent this hour sharing with you tonight was the basis of a speech issued September 14th of 2002 by Lou Rockwell Jr., delivered at the first Burton S. Blumberg Gold Conference in San Mateo, California. I published it on Sierra Madre. I've got several links embedded in it, which some of you may get thrown for a loop because it takes you back into some of the other reference links that I've talked to you about throughout the course of this last several days. But let's park this story for a moment. I did talk to you in the last hour about some gold and silver offerings that are available. If you've got an interest, do give me a call, 602-799-8214. You can also email me through the website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals. The web address is kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. It is live again. Over the weekend, I received something on my cell phone that absolutely blew me away. I said, "Nah, I can't believe this." I was at Denny's when I saw this thing, and I sent the article over to one of my websites at home. And I came home and got on it. And I broke into tears. As I began to read the comments left by so many other people in the previous few days, that basically was the same kind of response for so many people. I believe something like 12 or 14 years ago, country singer Randy Travis had a stroke. Never been able to entertain again. He's still alive. I don't think he's got the ability to speak too well, too clearly, too cleanly. That we'll never hear a new piece of music from him. Or will we? That became the shock of my night the other evening. I know it. I understand. Julie, it did the same thing to me. It's profound. This whole scientific thing that AI, and I can't even remember what the heck it stands for, they create hot-looking babes that aren't even real. Real-looking people. There's so much other stuff they're involved with. Well, there's a group of people involved with AI who had a strong belief and a desire to do something. And they pulled Randy Travis in and began speaking with him and his wife and several other people that Randy Travis had worked with in years before. And they brought a singer in that had worked with Randy for 4 years before his stroke. And they began to discuss some things. And they provided the words for a song and a song. And the singer sang the song. And Randy nodded his head. What the AI has been able to do is literally take Randy's voice, his real voice as it was, and created this brand new piece of music. My friends, that's what we're going to close this program with tonight. Maybe you were never into country music. I understand. But to listen to this, and I've watched several different versions of it, including one that was actually done in the studio, and to watch Randy's response was simply amazing. Simply amazing. I was shocked by it. I'm not a big lover of this whole AI mentality, but when I saw this, it's like it began to create a whole different feeling for me and make us realize some of the things that could be done of a positive nature, not the negativity of all this crap. I hope you're going to enjoy this as much as I did. I will see you tomorrow, Lord willing, without apology. I am Jeffrey Bennett.
She had eyes like diamonds, and they caught the light. Oh, but they were dark and deeper than the night. But when she'd smile, out came the sun. And there ain't no more where that came from. Had a dress that swayed all around her knees, and a voice as soft as a summer breeze. A touch that told me I was the one. There ain't no more where that came from. I must have said to myself there might be somebody else out there somewhere. I must have said to myself it's a great big world of girls are everywhere. But now I know there was only one, and there ain't no more where that came from. That came from. Oh, where that came from.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.